Friends Podcast.
Hi, I'm Diane Hunt. I'm an impressionist realist painter connecting with nature through my brush. I work in oil paint and watercolor, and I live in the countryside of Maryland's Eastern Shore, not far from the Chesapeake Bay. You can find me online at dianehuntstudio.com. and on Facebook and Instagram at Diane Hunt Studio.
Hi, I'm Constance Brosnan of Steve Brosnan's Jewelry Designs. I live in Oklahoma on a prairie, and I make handmade jewelry in silver, copper, and brass. I'm an artist that paints. I paint pastels and in oils sometimes.
Hello, this is Bob J.K.L. I'm the host of this podcast. I am a emerging representational artist. I do historic renderings, seascapes, landscapes, botanicals, birds, and whatnot, with a tight illustrative hand in watercolor, pen and ink, and acrylic paints. And I live in Oklahoma City. Well, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Artist Friends Podcast. My name is Clyde J. Kell, and we are listening to episode 105 for July the 12th, 2021, and I'm here with my two best artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Constance. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Constance.
Hi, Clyde. Hi, Diane. Hello, everybody.
Welcome to another outstanding episode. And if our listeners go to www.talkartpodcast.com, that's talkartpodcast.com, you see our recommended video links, and we've got some videos of from our two favorite shenanigans, Raffi and Klee, some of their opinions on some things, and then a video from Mikey of Jerry's Artorama. And then a really interesting video of the evolution of art and how it's shaped our modern world. And we'll see if we get around to talking about any of that. Right now, I'm going to send the mic over to Diane and let her lead the conversation.
Well, the first video we had was about if art serves a purpose. And I think he did mention how boring the world would be if art did not exist. I can't imagine not having any music, not having any paintings, not having any designs on our clothes, not having, you know, all kinds of, all the arts basically make our life so much more interesting. And that was like, I guess that's what a lot of people don't realize. They don't think about that. Like, you know, they kind of put artists down sometimes and think, oh, you're just an artist. You know, you don't really make any money, you know, no value really. And I think that's kind of part of that, that they don't realize how much enrichment we artists bring to their life. What do you guys think?
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, I think most of all, when you're an artist, it's not something you can help. And you're just driven to be an artist. And a lot of times it does help people, and it's historical value a lot of times also. But a lot of times, to me, being an artist is, like I said, not something you can help. You just have this compulsion to paint or to do whatever kind of art you need to do. A lot of people also, it's good for health benefits or mental benefits, they do it for relaxation and a way to get things out on paper or whatever their form of art is, to get it out. And like I've said before, a lot of times to me is to let people know what I'm thinking. Because it is a way of letting people know what's going on in your mind. A lot of times you don't know how to express yourself unless you express it that way. Some musicians express their music that way. Artists express, that's your thoughts out into the world by having it expressed musically or writing or painting, whether it, you know, whatever the medium is. Yeah, I think it serves a big purpose. Whether it's just for your own enjoyment or somebody else's enjoyment, to make a political statement, or a just purely for your own enjoyment. I mean, whatever that enjoyment is, it's definitely important.
And that last video of the, you know, the evolution of art, that takes to, you know, the cavemen. You know, in the video is really, really good. The guy starts out with, you know, the cave paintings, and he, scientists and archaeologists, you know, have been for years have been studying, you know, the cave paintings, and they noticed that they actually started seeing a progressive change in style. They started off, they were mostly the earlier ones, where mostly stick in and then a little bit of animals, but then they started to get more elaborate. And that's maybe at that time, that gene that's in humans, we cannot not create. We have to create. And that proves it. From the earliest times, you know, they were decorating. They started out, it looked like it was a recording. They were recording their hunt, their daily lives. And then they started getting a little more elaborate, and it got to be more decorative, you know, and he, what was interesting, this gentleman in the video made the connection to the cave drawings. Possibly there was a connection with the hieroglyphics with the Egyptian, you know, and throughout the ages, art, you know, developed. We as humans, we cannot help ourselves, of course. And in line with this is the poetry and the writing and the philosophy and which is, you know, a part of the arts, you know, and then the music. And it's just like each throughout the ages, each generations. And as human beings, you know, of course, they didn't bring up the one thing which I realized right away is that we as human beings, we also have a divine spark. It's a divine spark in us. So we have to create in order, you know, and to express that divine will. And, well, you know, of course, our modern times try to, you know, they do their best to try to get rid of that, but it's there. It's obvious throughout the ages, you know, and you can see. So, yes, in answer to Klee and Raffi's question, yes, art does have a purpose.
And it has a purpose not only for the artists, but also the people that are observing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like it works both ways. I mean, I've seen people in museums and stuff looking at paintings and crying. You know, it's like you never know how something's going to, you know, move somebody. And it's not a tangible thing that you don't know that's going to happen. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. I've done a painting. I did a painting one time for a lady. She had twins. And one of the twins didn't make it. And so she had me do a painting of the twin that didn't make it. It was all swaddled, you know, so I did it. And she hung it in her living room. And now she gets to enjoy it all the time. You know, I mean, when you have a loss like that, and then you get to have a reminder there that you had that loss, it's nice, you know. I mean, I know it's painful, but then it's like a validation of the child that you lost, you know? There's always that, you know, so.
You know, I've done, you know, pet portraits, and it's been a while. One. So far, I haven't got one for this year, but I managed to get two or three, at least the last couple of years, you know. And one pet portrait that I did was of a colleague, their dog. For some reason, all pets have passed away. That's why.
Yeah. Right. I've done the ones that were still alive, but they're probably all passed away by now. But yeah, I've done those too.
I don't have business cards printed up, you know, deceased pet painter, you know.
No, you don't want to say that. Just do pet portraits.
This lady, it was of their family dog that had passed away. And when he was a pup, she gave me a photograph she wanted, you know, so I did it. And when I delivered it to her, she literally embarrassed herself because she started crying right there in the break room. Everybody was like,
whoa. Well, you did a good job then, you know.
Going on, you know, her eyes were getting red, you know, everything. And she couldn't help her.
It just means you did a good job.
And it almost got me crying because I said, wow, I didn't think I was that good, you know. I could create a piece of artwork that would bring somebody to tears.
Yeah, they get to look at it all the time now and remember the pet they were so fond of. You know, that's a plus thing, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, art does have a different purpose, you know, on that sense. And Diane, what's the next one?
What inspires you? What's your inspiration?
Somebody asks you what inspires you, what do you say?
Answer it. Yeah, that's what it was more, because we've talked about what inspires you before, you know.
Yeah, we have crossed this subject before.
This subject, what caught my attention was when, you know, if you are at a show or you know,
you've done shows, haven't you, Diane?
Yeah,
somebody comes up and asks you about your art and so almost always somebody says, well, what inspired you to create, how do you?
Yeah, they do. They do. When I first started doing it, I would get that glazed look in my eyes and along with that deer in the headlight look. And then I started getting used to it. And then I would just tell them what the idea behind the painting would be. You know, I learned to have a, you know, a thing about that with painting in mind when they asked me that. And especially with the jewelry, you know, I would have something, usually a certain stone or something. I would have, when I bought the stone, I had something in mind for it when I bought it, you know, I would see the stone online and then I had an idea in mind when I bought it. So I would go ahead and make that out of it when I bought it. But paintings were different, you know, usually when you're doing a painting, especially if it's plein air, it's all about the place, you know, that inspires you. You know, so in still lives, it's all about how you set it up. You finally work the whole thing out until you're happy with the setup.
Like last week, we were talking about, you know, invisible artwork. So Diane, how are you going to answer when you standing there saying you have an invisible piece of artwork? How are you going to say that? What inspired you to create that?
Well, I mean, I take my inspiration mostly from my environment and the places I've been and the feelings I have for different locations. Most of my art is landscapes. So that's really what I talk about mostly. But I mean, I've done animals and stuff too. And most of those are my own animals or animals that I know. So, you know, I could just speak to that, but since I do realism mostly, it's kind of like, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory. I don't get that question a lot, I guess, because they can see what it is, you know.
Yeah.
I think you probably get that question more with abstracts or
yeah,
they can't relate to, like they're trying to figure it out, like.
Yeah. Well, you got to have a good story for you know. Like we talked about that guy for invisible art, you know, when I display my first invisible.
And he always had a good story for that. That guy did. But yeah, the abstracts now, when you show abstracts, you do have to have a good story for that.
My first piece of invisible art, you know, that somebody asked me, well, you know, this contains.
Are you really going to have to be, you're going to have to be brave enough to do an invisible piece now, Clyde?
This piece contains the cosmic rays of the universe colliding with the parallel dimensions of our messed up world. How's that sound?
Well, you can always say what you can. I have an idea for an invisible one.
Okay.
Black hole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put a white circle, and then it's going to be black, and that's going to be a black hole.
Okay. Now,
I already got my idea in my head.
Getting into the silliness, Diane, what's that? What's Mikey talking about?
Oh, he was talking about having projects and how many you have. Too many. And I normally don't have a lot of projects going on at one time. I pretty much have one main one, I guess. And I'll work on it to a point, and then I have to wait for it to dry or something, and I might start something else. But I don't have too many going at one time most of the time. I don't have the space to have them set up to do that. So I guess that keeps me from being starting a bunch of paintings and never getting any of them finished.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to do that, try to have too many going. And then a lot of times what would happen would be that I would not end up finishing any of them. So I decided that I would only have one painting going at a time. No matter what I was working on, it would just be the one. Now, I might work on getting panels or something else done, you know, to get ready to, mm-hmm. things to paint on in the while I was working on something, but I would only work on one thing at a time, because I know what happens when you start working on two or three items at once.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I'm always trying to meet deadlines or something. I think it has a tendency to make you lose interest in the first one, like if you mm-hmm. start other ones.
Yep.
It's hard,
or you'll lose that momentum or something. Mm-hmm. It just gets lost in the gets lost on it or something. I don't know what happens, but anyway,
I can identify with what Mikey was saying, because it's not that I have too many projects; I have too many ideas.
Wow. That's always the case.
But you have to learn to channel.
I come up with, I'm going to do this one. Okay. And I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to do this. And then
yeah, I do this because I know what happens if I try to start too many.
I end up, Mikey says, you end up not doing nothing. He talks about you don't complete the project. In my case, I just don't start sometimes.
No, I used to try and do too. A long time ago, I worked on several at a time. And what happens is they end up over in the corner because I lost my train of thought on it and my enthusiasm. I just throw it on the side and then I don't finish it.
Yep. Well,
that's good.
That's in my case. Sometimes I just don't get started, and I really sometimes I have to force myself. Okay, just do this. Don't worry about doing that other thing. Just do this.
It is hard to focus sometimes. Like you have all these ideas and you don't know which one to go after, and you start one and then you think, oh shoot, I should have started the other one instead. You know, you do go through that.
Well, you can make notes of what you want to do.
Yeah. But you know, it's like in the moment you want to do a certain thing, and then, you know, that moment's gone like the next day, you know, it might not be something that you really.
Well, that's what sketchbooks are for, to write and draw something out about that idea and make notes and sketches for it. So that when you get done with what you're working on, see, that gives you the momentum to finish what you're working on so that you can get on to the next one. That is what I have discovered is the push to get to the next painting that you want to do. Oh, I want to do this. I want to do this. Well, you finish that one, move on. Make some sketches and some notes in a sketchbook. And then that way
I've had several sketches that I, you know, are for future projects. But
right.
That's like I switched to the last two or three weeks. You know, I've been working in watercolors. And the reason why, because, and Constance, it's your fault, because I started to do work on that painting in oil of your two donkeys, and it started going downhill fast.
Uh-oh.
Upset. I said, So I stopped. I got the underpainting of it, and I just laid it off to the side. And then I started to do another oil painting. It started going downhill. I said, okay, this is it. So I quit. Yeah, so I switched to watercolors just to give myself a bit of a break. Now I'm getting ready to, I'm going to go back to oils, but it was.
Well, finish the first one first. Don't allow yourself to go on, move from that.
Well, I got to go.
Keep your sketchbook handy so when you get bunked or whatever it is that's making you angry, don't keep being angry about it. Just continue to sketch in the book with your ideas and little watercolors,
yep,
making notes and stuff for your future paintings. And then go back and work on, because I know what it's like to get frustrated with a painting. You just need to take a break and do something else.
Yeah.
And then go back and, because sometimes you just have to take a breath, because if you keep beating your head against the wall, it's not going to go anywhere. Sometimes you might just need to throw that thing in the corner and start over.
Yeah. It's been.
Sometimes you can't, once it's messed up too bad, you just have to throw it in the corner and give it up and paint the other side with gesso and start over again.
Who knows? I'm not ready to do that yet, but hey, I'm.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes you just have one that just isn't working out and you just need to start fresh.
Yep.
That happens. I've done it.
I think we'll
many times. I'd throw them in the fire pit out there and burn them.
I'm not that desperate. But I think we're about ready to wrap this up. I already mentioned, Diane, you want to talk a little bit about that, the evolution of art video? What'd you think about that? What's your thoughts on that?
I can see how, well, I've had art history a lot. So the evolution of how art came about is really interesting, and how things developed. And a lot of, along the way, the governments and a lot of social stuff played into what kind of art was important, and like all the church, the churches coming up, they wanted a certain things depicted so people could, because a lot of people couldn't read, so back years ago, so they wanted the artists to depict a lot of the stuff that was in the Bible or whatever, and so people would understand the different stories and things a little bit better. So there was a lot of things that played into how art developed. Past the caveman days, they were depicting things that were happening in their life and trying to record it in some way. And I guess that's sort of a lot of what has happened in art, but then there's all these other people that have played into what, was important for the artists to do, and they funded the artists for different things. And so those kind of art, or that segment of art, came about more because they had the support of, people paying for things to get done and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, that fed into a lot of how the art developed. That was interesting.
Yep. And that video reminded me, have you guys ever watched the Mel Brooks movie, The History of the World?
Yeah.
Probably, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
There's a scene in there where he talks about, he says, the first comedian, and it shows back in caveman days, and it shows this guy trying, he's grunting and whatever, and the other people are just kind of staring at him, and then all of a sudden the dinosaur comes out, eats the guy up, and they all start cracking up, laughing.
Why was he grunting?
He was grunting because he was trying to be the first comedian, and they weren't paying attention to him. Yeah, they were frowning at him.
Oh, like instead of the hook on the end of the cane to pull him off stage, the dinosaur just ate him?
Yeah, dinosaur just grabbed and ate him, and then they all started laughing. It was the first comedian.
That's a rough crowd, isn't it? Talk about a rough crowd. Oh, gosh.
That little short clip of this evolution of art, for some reason, that clip in Mel Brooks movie came to my mind. Things just kind of happen. We don't, and we don't necessarily plan them, but hey, because his movie, History of the World, they had some realistic things, but of course it's comedy, whatever, especially when Louis the 13th or whatever, it's good to be the king. And then the scene of the
inspection. Yeah, it depends on who comes after you, whether they take you out with a guillotine or not.
Yeah.
Those people were pretty ruthless back in those days.
The Spanish Inquisition, you know, and the way they did that. I mean, it was so funny, you know. No, will you convert? No. I'm sorry. I love that movie. Favorite movies. Yeah. Anyhow, before we get carried away, let's wrap this up. Folks, you have been listening to the Artist Friends Podcast, episode 105 for July the 12th. And I'm here with my two best artist friends, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and I am Clyde J. Kale. And thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy these podcasts. Please give us a thumbs up. Let us know. Send us some comments. We appreciate the comments. And of course, if you are a working artist and you would like to contribute, the link is always there, www.talkartpodcast.com, talkartpodcast.com. The Zoom link is there. We meet every Monday, and you're more than invited. If you don't want to participate in the podcast, we'll just mute you and we'll do the recording. We usually end up talking for an hour, sometimes 2 hours. We only record about 30 minutes or so, but the rest of our conversation is just talking about art and what we're working on and cows and chickens and farm problems and whatever else. And those two trying to get me to go out and get stung by bees and bit by snakes. And we have a variety of conversations. I'm going to say bye to Diane and Constance.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Constance. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Clyde. Good night, Diane. Good night, Charles. Come back again.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, too, for joining me. And until next time, bye-bye.
The Artist Friends Podcast is produced and edited by Clyde J. Kale. Participating artists, Diane Hunt and Constance Bronson, and Clyde J. Kale. You can find more information about Diane Hunt at www.dianehuntstudio.com. Constance Bronson at www.etsy.com/shop/CBROSNANS. Clyde J. Kale at www.cjkaleartworks.com. If you would like to participate or appear as a guest on the Artist Friends Podcast, please email cjkale@mystery-otr.com. If you enjoy these podcasts, please give us a thumbs up or a star rating, and most of all, send us your comments. This podcast is issued under the Creative Commons license.